The next talk is Bayesian Intermittent Demand Forecasting for Large Inventories by Matthias Seeger, David Salinas, and Valentin Flunkert, and Matthias will give the talk.
So thank you very much. Is the microphone working good? This is joint work with my colleagues, David Salinas, Valentin Flunkert, and we're from Amazon Berlin in Germany. I start by motivating demand forecasting. So global retail today is driven by complex supply chains that span the whole globe. If you are, as a retailer, at the end of these chains, you need to maintain a web of local warehouses, each with their in and outbound constraints. Your goal is to process customer orders as quickly as possible. If your business demands same-day delivery, then you also need distribution centers very close to your customers in order to speed up the shipping. You might deal in perishable goods, such as grocery, which you cannot simply not stock for a long time. Finally, you have to constantly deal with peaks and bursts. For example, here, Black Friday, then comes Christmas, Valentine's Day, and it goes on. What is really important to always remain in stock during these times, but then afterwards, don't drown in too much stuff. So there's really a question at the center of all of this. What will the demand be in the future? Or how much of what will we sell? This, in essence, is demand forecasting. So it's a really big problem in business, and given that, it received fairly little machine learning attention so far. Let's have a look at some examples of retail sales data. So for example, on the left up there, you see some highly seasonal item. Essentially, it's just an irregularly spaced train of bursts. Are these caused by moving holidays or maybe by price changes or promotions? You have to find that out. In the middle, this is an item. It sells really well, rather healthy, and then suddenly it goes out of stock for several months. We can sell it, so the sale is zero, but the important question is, what is the demand during these out-of-stock periods? Finally, on the right, again, this item is selling really rather healthily, but if you zoom in, almost if you look at every single day, then very often you just see zero sales. This is an instance of intermittent demands, which means that you really have to deal with a lot of zeros in your data. In this talk, I'm going to show you a scalable Bayesian model for intermittent demand forecasting. And then I also briefly sketch a production system that we build that runs such models at large scale. Let me just walk you through the generative model. And this is a model for a single item. We start with a deterministic function. For example, we could pick a linear combination of weights to be learned and then features that we design. So for example, we could use kernels centered around or before or after holidays. We could use seasonality, promotion indicators, price changes, and so on. At this point, you can also plug in a nonlinear function and learn that. We add to that a random part, and that really comes straight out of a time series textbook. This part, the role of this part is to account for temporal smoothness and the growth of uncertainty over time. Now we take this latent function and we map it through a nonlinearity in order to get a rate or probability. Now mind you, everything is latent so far, it's not observed. Now we can sample the observed data from the likelihood. For example, if we have count data, as in our case, we could draw that from a Poisson likelihood given the latent rate. So that's the model. How do we train the free parameters in this model, such as, for example, the weights in the linear function? We end up maximizing the likelihood of the data, which ends up being rather tractable in this case. Once you've learned the parameter, prediction is rather simple. You plug in your parameters into the model, and then you just simulate it forward in time in order to create probabilistic predictions. And this is really a key of this model, that it outputs probabilistic predictions, as many ordering decisions are based on quantiles of predictive distributions. So it's simply not enough just to output point forecasts, you need the whole distribution. I already mentioned intermittent demand. Let's see how severe this problem is. So it took a typically sized data set, and I just computed a histogram of daily sales. As you can see, more than 98% of all days, the sales are zero. So data like that calls for a dedicated likelihood to model it. So here's what we do. We use a combination of three stages. First stage, we simply just ask, is the sales zero or positive? That's a binary choice. We can use a logistic regression likelihood here. Next decision at the second stage, we say, is it one or larger than one? Right? It's another binary choice, another logistic regression. And at this point, we can stop and say, okay, if it's two or larger, we can draw that from a Poisson and add two to it. So the important advantage of such a multi-stage combined likelihood is that it can represent low count probabilities exactly, and they occur very frequently in your data. So here, just to summarize the key aspects of this model, it has a latent Gaussian structure consisting of a learned function plus a random process, and the latter accounts for temporal smoothness and the growth of uncertainty over time. And then on top of that, we place a specially designed likelihood in order to deal with the intermittent demand. So let's see how that's doing on a single item. So what I show you here is on the left is the training range. That's where the model sees the data. That's the black line is the true data. And then on the right, that's a bit more interesting. That's where we predict into the unknown. And I also show you in bold the median of the predictive distribution. And then I show you an interval from the 10th to the 90th percentile. So this is looking rather good here. So it's predicting, very close range predictions are very accurate. Then it also gets the seasonal structure quite right, a Christmas peak, some other sales peaks, and it shows a reasonable growth of uncertainty over time. But clearly there's something wrong here. We're missing this peak over here. So we can just look this up and say, oh, that's Mother's Day, and that's an important sales day for this item. Oops, we forgot it, right? But now we can go back to our model. We can engineer a few features that account for this day. We put it in, retrain the model, and it predicts a lot better. So now we are forecasting this peak as well. And if you look closely, the overall uncertainty in the prediction goes down because now we account for more of the signal through our model. Another interesting aspect of demand forecasting is how we treat out-of-stock situations. So if we don't have the item, we are not in stock, then we cannot sell it. So obviously, the sales is going to be zero. But the important question is, what is the demand during out-of-stock periods? Here's an example. Here's an item which is actually out of stock every time you see the red bar. And during these times, you have no sales. So how can you deal with this signal? Well, one baseline would be just to ignore it and fit the targets whatsoever, right? So then you fit zeros when you're out of stock because that's your sale. You can do that, but usually you end up with predictions that are systematically too low. We call this underbiased predictions, and this is clearly visible in the prediction range. The true target's almost always above the, it's quite often above the error bars. Underbiased prediction here. So interestingly, in a Bayesian model such as ours, it's rather easy to treat out-of-stock situations. You will simply just say that at these days, you didn't observe the target. So this is what our model does here. And what's interesting is that it becomes uncertain in the training range now because the fact that we don't sell the item is doesn't help us to infer the demand. Right? So then what's also visible now is if you go into the prediction range, predictions improve a lot. And in particular, the underbias is essentially gone. How do we learn parameters in this model? So we maximize the likelihood. Equivalently, we minimize the negative log likelihood. And this can be done. We do this by BFGS optimization. But how do we compute that criterion and its gradient efficiently? Now let's just suppose that we had a bit of a simpler model. We use the same structure, but we use a Gaussian likelihood. In this case, it's well known that you can compute the log likelihood and its gradient just by running Kalman smoothing. But that doesn't really work for our data. It's intermittent demand, which really does need a dedicated likelihood, such as the multi-stage, certainly not a Gaussian likelihood. And in this case, Kalman smoothing does not do the job anymore. What we do instead is we use a variant of approximate Bayesian inference at this point in order to basically enable the learning. And a very, very rough idea is that you can think about this as iteratively fitting a non-Gaussian distribution, for which exact inference is intractable, by a sequence of Gaussian distributions. So in every iteration, I'm fitting this with another Gaussian, and each such fit requires me to run Kalman smoothing once. More specifically, our inference algorithm is an instance of the Newton-Raphson optimization algorithm, which is known to converge very, very rapidly in terms of the number of iterations. Now, what is interesting here is that normally, if you implement Newton-Raphson, you need cubic time per iteration, but because we can reduce things to Kalman smoothing in this case, we actually manage to slash this down to linear time per iteration and thereby make the whole approach tractable. Now, we can take this inner Newton optimization box and we plug it into the outer BFGS optimizer that does the learning for us. So essentially, we do learning by nested optimization here. And while this sounds rather complicated, in some sense it is, but we managed to come up with a fast and highly robust implementation of this. And in fact, if you run this on our data, then for most of our items, full learning converges in a few seconds. Okay, finally, let me just show you, sketch you our production system pipeline. Just to give you some numbers, we regularly process more than 5 million items, and that comes down to several billion item days. We have input that is stored distributedly on Amazon S3, and all our processing is done data parallel using Apache Spark, and we run our pipeline on custom-sized Elastic MapReduce clusters. So let's just go along how data flows through the pipeline. First stage in that pipeline is a feature transformer, takes the raw data, joins it, and processes it into features, which is essentially a language that the forecasting models need to do their job. So here you can just see an example of a few features that compose our feature vector. Next stage is the model training. We've already seen how that works for latent state forecasting, but we can also do simpler models to compare with. Then once the model is trained, we basically simulate it forward in time in order to create probabilistic predictions. And these predictions come in form of sample paths that we can store efficiently because they're essentially sparse vectors. Finally, we have an elaborate evaluation component which serves several use cases. So for us, developers and scientists, it allows us to compare different models and different variants of our models by comparing them by backtesting. But for our customers, we can create highly aggregate reports in order to help the stakeholders to do the decision making based on our forecasts. And also, our results are fed into automated ordering pipelines that do the ordering every week. That brings me already to the end of my talk. Just to conclude, I've shown you a robust and also highly scalable Bayesian methodology for intermittent demand forecasting. At the core of it, you need to learn parameters, and that's driven by inference that is reduced to linear time Newton-Raphson optimization. And I've also shown you or sketched a machine learning platform in order to get such forecasting systems into production. Finally, I hope I could convince you that demand forecasting is an interesting and also important problem to work on. And there are many details I didn't talk about. If you're interested in these details or want to know more about our work, please feel free to come our poster at 192 tonight. Thank you very much.
Please come to one of the microphones to ask questions.
Hi. Question, how many features do you have per product, for example? Is there like types of products that has, like, for example, Mother's Day? I believe it covers all of your products, but maybe you have some types of products that has special types of features, how you can, like, in numbers, how many average feature per product you have?
I mean, this number is changing depending on the application. We also do forecasting in different regions of the world for different parts of the catalog. But we don't right now use very many, maybe rather in the order of hundreds. And feature engineering is an important problem for us. So we also move to nonlinear methods that might ease that problem a little bit.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
I was also wondering about features, but for the time, again, about Mother's Day, is the time data just like a date timestamp, or are you able to encode information like a holiday, which is drifting and wouldn't be on the same date year to year?
Yeah, it's quite important to deal with moving holidays, and we basically do this by centering the features in a relative way. So if Mother's Day is another day next year, then it will be spaced relative to that day. So that of course, the drawback of that is that you have to know that. So you have to basically put domain knowledge into this feature vector. But I guess the answer is that we space them relative to dates. So if dates move, then the features move as well.
Hi, very quick question. That's nice work. First of all, how many iterations do you need to do over the whole historical time series before you get LBFGS convergence?
So LBFGS is kind of the outer loop, and then Newton is the inner loop. How many iterations?
Yeah.
That depends on the size of the feature vector, but it's usually we do not run more than 50 or maybe at maximum 100 iterations.
Okay, and do you get any convergence issues from LBFGS, or you need to have some smart initialization?
No, we do not observe. I mean, we had initial problems with a not so good LBFGS implementation, with a BFGS implementation. Then we switched to the common one that everybody's using, and that's sorted these problems out. Right. So we
Thank
do
you.
Not do any special tricks for initialization.
Okay, thanks.
Hello.
What features did you add for Mother's Day? Like, it sounds like you didn't just like program in the day itself. You added some sort of more abstract features.
In general, we use for these holidays we use sequence of kernel features. But I think in this case it was really only one or two features. I mean, you can do better. You can shape these days by using several kernels. That's an instance of feature engineering, and that's a difficult problem for us.
So at this point, we need to move on to the next talk, but please come to the poster session to ask additional questions. And let's thank our speaker again.